I'm Lee Reifenberg. I'm the curator of images at the Delaware Historical Society.
What are the earliest historical remnants of anything resembling board games?
Board games actually go back a lot further than we think. There were early versions of Parcheesi and backgammon, dice, and all sorts of other checkers, for instance, all being played by ancient cultures like the Mesopotamians, the Egyptians, and the Aztecs, among others. So it's a multi-billion dollar industry that we sort of think of in very modern terms today, but it has some very ancient roots.
So how do board games reflect different economic times throughout history?
We do call the board game industry sort of a recession-proof phenomenon, and a couple of great examples would be World War I, when times are bad and people are scared and they're very much remaining insular and at home with their family and friends. This is when we actually see the introduction of Parcheesi, and it became kind of an instant surprise hit with all ages, and so Parker Brothers really couldn't produce it fast enough. They couldn't keep it from flying off the shelves. A little bit later, during the Great Depression, we're seeing unemployment in the country hovering around 20% with really no relief in sight. But this is when Monopoly bursts on the scene. And so again, it's the hot ticket item between 1933 and 1935. And part of the reason for that is regardless of their situation, people can kind of compete against each other with fake money and the sky's the limit. So it represented a sort of form of escape that people really needed at the time.
Other than the economic piece, are there other trends in popular culture, other things throughout history that you see the board games reflecting in just different styles or maybe even the way the board games are made?
In the 19th century, for instance, board games were very didactic. They were used as teaching tools. There were some very specific themes that you start to see, religion and living a moral and upstanding life, making good choices. We see that with a Sunday school-themed game that we have in the collection. If you were a kid in the 1850s, a type of game like this would have been very familiar to you, learning to make good choices, live a moral life. And so by our standards today, would it have been tons of fun to play? Probably not. But it certainly would have been preferable to learning tons of Bible verses or catechism or that sort of thing. So in that sense, it was certainly a good alternative. By the 1930s, we're really starting to see board games trending toward popular culture, especially in literature and film. So, for instance, we have a game based on The Three Musketeers that was released around 1930. And because, especially with books, these are characters that people already know and love, a board game based on those characters and themes is a way to sort of keep that relationship going. So by the time you see their faces printed on the box, you're really ready to go on the next adventure with them. So that's really fun. We also see it in film. For instance, when the movie Around the World in 80 Days came to theaters in 1956, a movie-themed board game followed soon after. And in this case, it's a super colorful game. It has photos of the cast and really visual elements that you recognize from the movie. So it's something that people can identify with really quickly.
Around how many board games does the Delaware Historical Society possess, and which ones have stood out to you?
We identified about 30 board games. We have others as well, card games and things like that, but 30 board games. A few that really stand out to me are, one is the oldest in the collection, which is called The Game of the Goose from about 1790. And the fun thing about that is, although we call it a board game, it's something of a misnomer because it isn't played on a board at all. It's actually a large piece of handkerchief linen. It's a dice game, and the squares are actually printed right on the material with the instructions in the center, so it's really very portable and something that would have been great in colonial times when homes didn't have a lot of storage space. So it's a very practical leisure item. The other one that kind of sticks out in my mind is a World War II themed game called Tactics. Something that's very much of its time, something that you might not, that you might appreciate from a historical perspective today, but that you would have really recognized if you were a child in 1940 when the war was very much a part of your daily reality. So it's the whole object of the game was to create winning battle strategies with these sort of war-related themes that you would have recognized instantly. So you would understand the vernacular and the visual elements because they were very much a part of your daily reality and worldview.
Tell me about some of the board games with a Delaware connection.
We have three Delaware-themed games in the collection. These games were initially produced as sort of fundraising novelties by local municipal organizations. One of them was called All About Delaware, which was produced by the Delaware Chamber of Commerce, and it's very sort of slick and professional looking, and it's a great introduction to the state for a player who might not be familiar. And it's one that's so well produced it would really stand up beside any mass marketed game on the shelf today. Some of them were a little bit more homespun. We have one in the collection called The Game of Historic Hohkessen. These would have been produced in very limited release, so they're rare today. We're lucky to have it. But it is definitely, you can tell that it was very much a homemade game. And there's value in that because it lists as many historic sites and homes and businesses as possible. And the fun thing about it is that those places are now sort of recorded for as part of the historical record in a very unique format. We also have New Arcopoly, which was created in the late 80s, early 90s, when the sort of themed Monopoly boards were all the rage. Newark was not the only town in Delaware to get in on that action. There are also Middletownopoly board games out there. We do not have any in the collection, but Newarkopoly is another really fun one that we have.
And doesn't the origin of Monopoly have a Delaware connection as well, the story behind Monopoly?
It absolutely does, and that's something that a lot of people really don't realize. There's something of a corporate fairy tale out there that a man named Charles Darrow was the sole inventor of Monopoly at the height of the Great Depression in the 1930s. That's not true. The real roots actually go back to 1904 when a woman named Elizabeth Maggie from Washington, D.C. took out a patent for the Landlord's Game. And Elizabeth was a Quaker. She was a passionate follower of an economist named Henry George and his single tax theories. And so she took it upon herself to market her game or test it out with the public by sending it to Arden, Delaware, which of course is a single tax community. It's very well known for that. And folks in Arden began to play the game, and it was popular to some extent, but folks found it a little bit boring. They found the sort of moralistic tone of the game to be a little bit of a drag. The whole point of Landlords was that it was railing against corruption and monopolies and land grabbing among the wealthy, so it was very suitable for the beliefs in a single tax community at the time. The folks in Arden, which it's traditionally a very creative community, went ahead and modified the game to suit themselves. They created their own versions, and those games are actually considered the precursor to Monopoly. When the people of Arden were sort of modifying the game, ironically what they ended up doing was creating a game that celebrated the very things that Elizabeth Maggie was trying to fight against, simply because it was more fun. So it did involve paying for property with fake money and what have you, and really, the sad thing in Lizzie McGee's case was that she spent quite a lot of time peddling this game around. Parker Brothers rejected it for the same reasons that the folks in Arden were modifying it. It was boring, it was complicated, and it certainly wouldn't have sold well on the mass market. In fact, everyone who ever got a hold of the Landlord's Game to some extent modified it. And so that's why those versions are, eventually what it said is that those versions made their way into Charles Darrow's hands. It's believed by game historians that he was introduced to some of these modified versions by a friend. And so that's how they ended up in his hands. So but it does sort of blow a hole in the story that he could have ever been the sole inventor because the similarities are uncanny.